I usually ease my way into a homily, the sermon time, but today I'm going to plunge right in on the deep end and bring with me one of the big boys, Pope Francis. I just want to quote you something that he wrote from his very famous document, Evangelii Gaudium, which means the joy of the gospel, 2013. I'd just like to quote this for you in the light of the gospel and that first reading. Just as the commandment, thou shalt not kill, sets a clear limit in order to safeguard the value of human life, today we also have to say, thou shalt not, to an economy of exclusion and inequality. Such an economy kills. How can it be that it is not a news item when an elderly homeless person dies of exposure? But it is news when the stock market loses 2 points. This is a case of exclusion. Can we continue to stand by when food is thrown away while people are starving? This is a case of inequality. Today, everything comes under the laws of competition and the survival of the fittest, where the powerful feed upon the powerless. As a consequence, masses of people find themselves excluded and marginalised, without work, without possibilities, without any means of escape. Now, Pope Francis wrote those words in November 2013 when he published that exhortation. Luke wrote his gospel 2,000 years before that, and it seems to me that not a lot has changed, even if I add in the first reading from Amos. Now, Amos was a prophet at the time before Israel became one. There was the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, and the prophet Amos was saying, you people are feasting and feeding yourselves into what's going to be known as hell or Hades. You are living off the poor, and you're going to cop it, because coming over the hill are the Assyrians, and they know exactly where your weakness is. And so Amos was trying to tell the people, take notice of all of your people. Stop focusing on your wealth and start focusing on those that need your help. And because they didn't do that, the Assyrians did come over the hill and, of course, whooped them. Worse than Richmond beat GWS. And then they were deported to modern-day Iran, Babylonia. So Amos's warning wasn't heard. Jesus, in the gospel, talks about that same problem that exists between the haves and the have-nots. But as I look at the gospel, which is a parable, it's a story, and I think, if I'm correct, that it's the only parable that Jesus uses where a name is used. That name is Lazarus, and the word Lazarus means God helps, or one whom God helps. The rich man, many of you have grown up knowing him under the name of Dives. You often hear the story, oh, it's about Dives and Lazarus. Well, Dives is not named Dives in that gospel. He's just called the rich man. And from the Greek to Latin, the word for rich or rich man is Dives. So somewhere along the line, a capital D was put in there and he was given a name. But I think it's on purpose that Jesus keeps him nameless. Whereas the poor and the oppressed, he is able to give that person a name, Lazarus, the one whom God helps. We look also at the other comparisons, if you like, that are in that gospel story. The rich man does nothing. He's like those in the first reading that Amos is addressing. He's just feasting and having a fine life. And that's why the author goes to so much trouble to explain his clothes and what's on his banquet table. And then on the opposite end, you've got Lazarus, who isn't even begging. If he were begging at the rich man's house, if Lazarus were begging, it would be a sign that he was wanting to get out of this awful place in society where he was. But in one sense, he wasn't even doing that. We're not told that he was begging. He just said he longed to eat the scraps that fell from the rich man's table. And then the author, Luke, then goes on and describes Lazarus' state in mind. And it's awful when you think of a person with sores and dogs licking the sores, and they're also starving, or he's also starving. So the imagery is supposed to make us go, well, yuck. And it drives a big gap between the luxury and the loss that exists between these two worlds that are basically in the same street. But then he says that there's a gate. Lazarus was at the gate of the rich man. And then Jesus translates that into there is a gap between where the rich man went and where Lazarus is. And that gap can't be closed. Bottom line, how you live your life now will determine which side of that gap you will be. That's what he's getting at. Just to drive it home a little further, the rich man goes further. He says, Father Abraham. It's grovelling language. It's crawling. He calls from down in Hades. He says, Father Abraham. He will have done that his entire life as he was a mover and shaker, getting through his society to get all the wealth that he had. That's how he would have addressed everybody who was superior to him. Whereas, interesting, we hear nothing more of Lazarus. Nothing at all. Lazarus now fades away into the bliss of a heavenly banquet resting in Father Abraham's bosom. But the rich man, in to use modern parlance, doesn't get it. He even then says, oh, Father Abraham, grovel, send Lazarus with water on his finger to tip it on my tongue. In other words, because he doesn't get it, he's still treating Lazarus as this almost subhuman, as a slave. Send him down to fix me up. It's overstating the point in one sense. That really is just painting a picture of how the world was then, and as Pope Francis was saying, that how the world still is. And we must do everything we can to stop the world existing with such strategies, to stop people behaving in the way that they do, in the way that they manage their wealth, and in the way that they treat the poor. For those with so much wealth become numb to the poor. They become blind to the poor. It happened in Lazarus' day, and it happens more so today. And there have been plenty of times when I've stood here and given you facts and figures about how much of the world is owned by so few of the people, and how so much food is wasted. So I won't restate that. And then we've also talked here before about, well, what can I do? What can you do? Now, really, here in Pierce, what can I physically do to change that gap, for starters, to close that gap? And what can I do to help those that truly need help? Well, at least start. Don't sit there or stand there, and let's not say it's too big a problem for me to handle as I get in my car and drive safely home to put on my big TV to watch the football grand final in safety with a nice red wine or whatever goes on in your world. Because that's doing nothing. At least do something. One person this week, as you do your travels around, school holidays and all, one person, change one person's life this week for the better. You don't have to go too far to find them. They're not in this church, I'll tell you now. But they are in this suburb, in this part of Canberra. There are people who truly need not just the scraps from our table, they truly need to be treated just with dignity, to have their name recognised, to be respected, do something to change their life. It's not going to cost us anything, truly. If you want to get inside this gospel, then you identify, and I identify, with the rich man, because nobody in this church has ever really identified with Lazarus, I'm sure. Some of us have done it tough at times, but we've never identified like Lazarus is. But with the wealthy man, most of us here can. Thank heavens I'm not wearing purple robes. That would not be a good look in this homily. But I think that's probably the starting point. Identify what you have and then realise what is it that you do with what you have? What do we actually do with it all? And then we might start to see and hear the truly poor who are around us. And then aim for just one of those people, just one, and see if we can change their life this week. And if we all did that, that would be a huge difference just in this part of Canberra. Even if it was for 1 week, it might infect us to do it the following week as well. When it comes to the haves and the have-nots, I quoted St. John Chrysostom, died 409 AD. I quoted him 3 years ago at the beginning of a sermon. I want to use him now at the end of this sermon, because what I said then, 3 weeks later, applies even more so now. Because the poor who were poor then are even poorer now, and they're in our midst. And we are the wealthy, but Lazarus is out there. St. John says this: not to share one's wealth with the poor is to steal from them and to take away their livelihood. It is not our own goods which we hold, but it's theirs.